You are listening to the Green Lantern Corecast, episode number 29. This episode, Parliament of Vapors, a.k.a. this is the last time you hear me this episode, so savor it.
Tuning in to the Green Lantern Corecast. I'm your host, Frank Mateo, and joining us today are Colton, our correspondent on the food and pastry business in the Green Lantern Corp Mess Hall, Eric Cahill, our war correspondent for, Newsweekly? Newsweekly? Something like that. Somewhere. And Brandon West, who's our liaison to the Speedster Dynasty, where Baryon and Aperni has ruled over all time and space. How are you guys doing?
I'm all right.
Except for slowly being linked into food, I'm pretty fine.
It's being what to food? Being turned into food? What did you say?
You're turned into food?
Someone's eating?
No, except for Frankie slowly linking my role in the show to food, I'm fine.
Eat it. You should eat it. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah, maybe.
Anyway, Frankie, what are we doing here this week?
Well, this week we're actually going to be discussing our reviews on Brightest Day number 24, the last issue of Brightest Day.
It's over.
except for the aftermath, of course.
It's going to be led into the aftermath, but it's final issue of just Brightest Day. Green Lantern Emerald Warriors number 9, part 6 of the War of the Green Lanterns. And we're also going to be discussing the newly released Green Lantern movie trailer that was released recently. Number 3. I didn't even ask Brian, do we have any news?
Nope, that's pretty much it. New trailer,
people. It came out new recently. It shows new content. Even shows Kilowog, having a part of a speaking role in it. A lot of Sinestro talking.
Yeah, very much Sinestro-y.
It's fun. It's a lot more, shows a little bit more work on the CGI. Shows more of what we're going to be expecting to see in the movie, a little bit more constructs, more of the what we're going to expect for Hector Hammond, more Blake Lively sort of acting emotionally, I think.
I don't know what that is. It's not emotion. Well, it's like it's kind of like robotic emotion, I guess.
You know, for more on that, let's go to our liaison on Blake Lively, Brandon West. Brandon,
is she a human or is she? Can you tell me that?
Blake is a very lovely human girl with incredible talent.
A woman, and you're saying. This I can't believe.
And I didn't have a problem with what little she had in this trailer. I think we're going to see. We saw her only, comic book release in the movie, but
Hold on. I think I have a rebuttal from Colton. Colton, you had a rebuttal?
I have a rebuttal? I guess I do have a rebuttal. Comic relief, I'm not even sure if she's all that funny. I'm really going to have to start seeing her role like how she'll interact with Hal, because all we really see in this trailer is her just kind of standing in the corner. It's like, you go ahead, I'm going to stay here.
Yeah, she's not going to have anything to do in the movie. I mean, you're not expecting that, are you? She's just going to be the girlfriend.
I'm not saying she's going to have a huge role.
I didn't mind it.
Her only funny tidbit. She'll probably be angry for the rest of the movie.
Yeah, I didn't mind. I think she's a robot, but that's fine. Otherwise, what are you going to do? What do you guys think of the trailer in general?
Well, I have to say, the one thing that sort of caught most people, I would say, surprised, it's the flashing yellow symbol that most people aren't even going to know what the hell it's about.
Well, yeah, in the general audience, but that's Sinestro-Corps symbol. Yeah. Yeah, I guess it's this trailer definitely kind of – I don't know, because there was some scuttle. I don't know how much you guys want to talk about spoilers, but there was some scuttlebutt on the internet last week that some guy released all these story points, and a lot of them were very – the idea of like, oh, anybody who read the shooting script, they added all these different scenes, and they were very Geoff Johns-y kind of things about how we're going to see all the symbols and Star Sapphire is going to show up, and there's going to be a – I mean, I don't know how much spoiling you guys want to
do. Well, we already seen the Star Sapphire symbol. That was already shown in the original.
Well, yeah, but they – I mean, apparently the gem is going to show up or something. Well, I don't know how much spoiling you guys want to get to, but supposedly –
How about we just think of a trailer?
Well, that's – I'm actually – that's what I was going to say. One of the things that I saw in the trailer is kind of – I feel like a confirmation of that, but I don't know if that's – I don't know if you guys want to get into that or what – because there's a part in the trailer where they show – and again, if you don't want to hear it, please turn your ears away – Hal standing in front of a big yellow sun and a close-up on his eyes, and there's supposedly a scene in the movie where they flash forward to Hal destroying Coast City, and I thought that was maybe some kind of allusion to that, you know, so I don't know.
Oh, no.
I don't know.
It's definitely not going to go down there.
I don't know.
Who knows? What their long-term projections are for the Green Lantern, you know, a franchise.
What do you guys think of the trailer? I was fine. I think, you know, it was good. Whatever. Too much Sinestro, but it was good. I think they're
– All they did was talk.
Too much talking of Sinestro. Not enough how, you know, how Jordan giving us the oath, I believe.
No, it was all just Sinestro.
He did give us the oath. That was good. That was good of Hal. But yeah, there was a bit more Sinestro than Hal, which you'd expect in Hal's Big Break movie. You know, you'd expect a little bit more in the trailer about Hal.
What hell are you talking about Hal's Big Break movie? This is all Sinestro's show.
This is the Kyle movie. If you listen to the Hal fanboys, no, it's I don't know. Like I said, not. I don't know. I think they're all – it's good because they keep making me think it's going to be an all-space movie. And it's funny how you saw more of Hector's story, and it was almost like, oh, yeah, in hindsight, he's the actual villain of the movie. let's stick some Hector story points in there, which I guess is cool that they're showing us that actually happens in the movie, because I wouldn't have believed it if you told me, you know. But I want to say my major complaint in the trailer is that, you know, the joke where he's training with Sinestro and Kilowog, and Kilowog punches him in the face when he's trying to get off the floor, and he's like, you know, something along the effects of like, your enemy's not going to be as nice as me, and I'm kind of like, yeah, but I don't want to join any team that's going to punch me in the face when I'm on the floor. Like, it's like, not training. That's just like really foul thing to do to somebody. I don't know. I mean, I know it's obviously.
He is the drill sergeant.
Yeah, it's the exaggeration, you know, of how a drill sergeant would be.
Yeah, exactly. But I mean, you can't do that in the Army anymore. It's like this.
No, not anymore.
Yeah.
Like, but again,
this isn't the Marine.
No, it's
space. This is space cops. In this case, you know, space boot camp.
It just makes them seem
right away. Fast. I think that was a great scene. I just wish I hadn't seen it in the trailer.
I think
it would have played a lot better seen it coming.
I think it's just corny, but it's not a big deal. I just think it's kind of cheesy. You know, it's an obvious joke. As soon as somebody goes to help somebody up when they're training in any space movie, they always kick them in the face. You know, it's kind of like, oh, there you go. I mean, what they really should do is not take hands up. He should reach down. He should say, I've seen every movie. I know you're going to punch me in the face. You know, like that would be funnier than the scene you get. But whatever. I mean, it's cool. I mean, the new clips they showed, it's just more special effects to show that the special effects are getting finished. And I guess more
getting finished.
Yeah,
getting, because there are some scenes in there where it still looks like.
I know. The best is when they show him training with Kilowog and Sinestro, and it's just like the two of them on like a platform that looks like it's like out of mist or something. Like it's not at all like rendered. Though we do get to see the first real glimpse of the Guardians.
Yes, we do. We actually get a better glimpse of the Guardians sitting around their nice tall chairs.
What is with the Guardians and tall chairs?
You know, they have a status thing.
They're overcompensating for something.
Small.
I'm looking at a bunch of screen caps of the trailer, and these are some sexy people in this movie. Like, everybody looks so great. Like,
what is a comic movie?
Like, come on,
they're all like really.
Tim Robbins has always been sexy. What are you talking about?
He looks amazing here.
They all have like they're all really well tanned, et cetera. I mean. But I don't know. I don't think it's – I don't know. I mean, they're just,
well, there was a,
it's a movie. They're a handsome people.
There was a TV spot that released a couple of days before the trailer came out. Mm-hmm. And it had really pumped me up. Pretty much what we saw here, but it was in the span of 30 seconds. And I was just like, okay, I'm good. I'm ready. Let's bring it on June 17th. Let's go. And then, you know, 2 days later, we get this trailer, and now I'm back down.
I can agree with that. I can say we only need a 30-second trailer to show us that, you know, the movie's coming out. There's going to be action. There's going to be a next action, you know, action flick, so people who like, are just into action movies to go and see it. If you show us too much of what's going on in the movie, it's never a good thing.
I'm with you. I know the story kind of already, but like I'm with you that they shouldn't spoil too much in the movie. But I don't know. I mean, I think this movie they really do have to start showing more now, you know, because that was the whole thing where it's like, oh,
well, yeah, they had a hard time when we didn't
have anything. This is the final trailers, right? The rest is just going
to
be
So they had to show. Yeah.
Well, hopefully in the TV spots they won't ruin as much as they did. I mean, to bring up an example, once Spider-Man 3 came out, all the trailers, all the TV spots that were coming out for that movie ruined the entire thing. There was no secret to what was going to happen in the next story, in like the story beats. I just don't want that to happen for this movie.
Well,
I mean, they decided to watch it, but don't give them everything that's going to happen.
I can definitely understand that. You've got to admit, if they don't build excitement for the movie's going to flop because no one's going to go see it if they don't know it exists.
Yeah, they have to kind of. And I think, honestly, they're not really showing that much. They're really just showing a series of unconnected clips of just like space battles and stuff happening and like, you know, one or two jokes. I mean, if anything, this is like maybe the least spoilery trailer I've ever seen. I mean, you pretty much know the story of, you know, he obviously, some dude dies, gives him the power. He goes, finds the power, comes back to Earth, fights a bunch of bad guys, fights a big bad guy, gets the girl, and that's how the movie ends. I mean, it's basically like every other movie, so you don't need to worry too much about it. And I think
when I mentioned spoilers, I didn't mean does Hal kiss Carol. I meant why are we seeing Hector Hammond and his father have this random moment? Like, it just made no sense to put that moment in this trailer when you're not gonna be. It just made no sense for them to focus on Hector Hammond at all. Like, you're not gonna use the trailer to build up this villain, so don't put the scene in. And it just felt like they needed to show, like, there was.
That
they
was
were
in there.
Contractually obligated to show Peter's face or something, and it like, and I'm not worried about them spoiling the story for me or the general audience because the story's so random, like you said, it's so random that they won't be able to grasp all that in 2 minutes and say, yeah, that's a story I want to see, because you're not going to see the story, you're going to see Ryan Reynolds, Blake Lively, and action.
Yeah, I mean, I guess for the fans and the kind of twists and turns and stuff, but I do think, I mean, if anything, they should be front loading it more because they are kind of like behind the game, so to speak. But I mean, kind of every summer movie is. I mean, we're making fun of this movie for not really having a good game plan, but like I haven't seen much for Captain America and
Pirates too.
Yeah, there's barely anything for that. I haven't seen anything for X-Men First Class. I mean, there's a freaking X-Men movie coming out next month, and nobody's even talking about it. I mean, are you kidding me? Like,
that's mainly because it's so bad.
Well, who knows how bad it is? I mean, but I agree with you. Well, it doesn't look very good, but that doesn't matter. You know, I mean, how do I know? I haven't seen anything for it, you know?
Well, they're trying to hide it from everyone. Anyway.
They're, like, sneaking it around.
You know,
off topic.
Anyway, enough about the trailer, you know, the pros and the cons. But, you know, again, the movie's going to come out June 17th. We're all eagerly waiting for it.
Yeah, it's going
to
be good.
Can't wait to see it.
I think it looks good. I think now that the special effects are coming out, it looks kind of epic. And that's all I'm really hoping for, something epic.
Exactly. Well, now we're going to move on to our reviews of the recent comics that came out. Brightest Day number 24, the last issue of Brightest Day. To wrap up the story
Can I ask a really quick question before we get into discussing the issue? It's just a stupid question that I guess I don't remember, and I can't find the issue around. Does Aquaman get both hands back at the end of the issue?
Yes, he does.
Okay, so that was completely pointless. Okay, thank you. Just make it sure. the only major event that happened in Aquaman in the entire series was completely pointless. All right, just make it sure.
Right,
just a cheap joke. I just wanted to make sure that's what was true. Okay, go ahead.
Exactly what happened. Anyway, for what happens in Brightest Day number 24, we get to see more of the Parliament of Nature, I believe. You know, I guess we're calling the Parliament.
Oh, I think the Parliament of the Trees they're supposed to call, but I guess I don't know if this storyline expands that into something a little bit different.
Yeah, you know, Parliament of Vapors, the Parliament of Vapors, the Parliament of Earth, the Parliament of Water. these guys are going up against the Darkness, which is a zombie husk of Swamp Thing that has the imprint of Necron's mind on it. At which point, when did this happen? I have no idea, but that is exactly what happened in the story. And then they're all taken away just so Alec Holland can be imprinted onto Swamp Thing once again, but no longer just the memory or thinking it's Alec Holland, but the actual Alec Holland is the new Swamp Thing again, sort of, I guess, if that makes any sense. And he combats his evil duplicate, fights it off, wins, And everybody's happy, except for Hawkman.
And once again, people alone.
And Deadman.
Yeah, yeah, and who really cares? I mean, honestly, do I even have to say what a humongous waste of time this whole Brightest Day experiment has been? What?
Let's look at the fact of what happened during this year-long event of Brightest Day. How many people were again resurrected? 8, 9, how many? 11?
12
characters were resurrected for this event. Like 4 or 5 of them weren't even used actually in the story, but apparently played major parts for, the Earth to be saved. Most of these characters had their own things going on. Aquaman had, the Ameris people coming out of the Bermuda Triangle to destroy all of the surface whalers on, Pismo Beach. Dead Man had to eat cheeseburgers and, pop wheelies with his grandfather. Hawkman had to do a lot of sex and fight lion people and kill his girlfriend's
mother-in-law
and his mortal enemy that has been plaguing him for the past thousands and thousands of years. Martian Manhunter had to fight a schizophrenic, sort of imagine that, his planet was back. Doesn't really do anything up there except fight a schizophrenic and something to do with a girl he met when he was first brought to Earth, but is an elderly lady now. And burning in the sun. And what else happens then?
Nothing. I mean,
Professor Stein dies.
Professor Stein. Oh yeah, Firestorm.
Is he even still around? Yeah.
Let me move this up this entirely. Firestorm for Jason. Jason and Ronnie hate each other, sort of have an understanding of each other, and then have nothing to do with the story except being told they're gonna blow up.
Yeah,
apparently they still are going to die.
And that's my biggest problem with it, too, that it had the gall to leave all these storylines and cliffhangers, which are basically all Brightest Day did, right? Because you want to count it as a sequel to Blackest Night. Blackest Night, nobody knew if the Hawks were alive, and then Blackest Night, and then one issue was like, they're alive, and then they're dead. So basically all Brightest Day did was make sure Kendra Saunders was dead forever. Nothing happened to Dead Man at all. The Hawks were fine. What else happened?
Like you said, they killed Kendra and her mother.
Yeah, but even then, it's kind of like her mother wasn't even like a big
major character.
Basically,
major character of their history for the past.
That guy was major. But for the most part, like we've been discussing this entire time, these villains that they've created have been like created for this story. They weren't there already. So it's like they I don't want to say build because they didn't build, but they placed these villains in there and made them a part of the character's history, got rid of them quickly, and the impact of those villains is just non-existent. It's like, sooner they were gone, the story was over. Looking back now, that's the highlight of this series, is when Shiera was fighting her mom, is when Aquaman was fighting Siren, and that's the high point of this series. It's those two moments, and that's unfortunate.
Well, we can't say anything about John's schizophrenic girlfriend.
I wasn't feeling that.
DK,
yeah.
I think the storyline was insanely, just condescendingly pointless. I've said this before, but it's legitimately disgusting how much the DC does not care about its audience, and for this to be such a big tentpole series and for it to be completely meaningless, and really just be an engine for bringing John Constantine and Swamp Thing back, and how the last issue, all it did was set up another series of storylines. And as Brandon suggested, the only one of which that relates to Brightest Day is the Firestorm storyline. And that was the same storyline that was going on for the entire series. They just didn't resolve it, And as much as technically speaking, this series resolved itself in a way that a lot of Geoff Johns event series don't resolve themselves, it didn't actually add anything. It brought up a bunch of questions that it answered and then never have to be spoken of again. I mean, do we ever have to speak about John's, as you said, his crazy ex-girlfriend again? Do we ever have to talk about, obviously – if the Hawk storyline goes through, like, who believes it will? You know, do we ever really have to talk about Kendra Saunders again? No. Do we ever have to talk about Deadman being alive for 20 minutes again? No. Do you really think that the next guy who writes a Deadman miniseries, like, in 10 years is going to mention that he was in love with Dove from Hawk and Dove? No. I mean, it's all a waste of time. It's all a waste of time. You know, and all it really did was bring Swamp Thing back. And what's hilarious about it is that it brought Swamp Thing back and connected him with Alec Holland, which is funny because Geoff Johns is retconning or undoing the one major point in Swamp Thing's history that makes him a significant character, you know, that he actually wasn't Alec Holland the whole time. Now he's like, well, now he is Alec Holland, and it is this magical nonsense, and he does need a host, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. You know, I guess I like that he made Swamp Thing at the end kill a bunch of corporate businessmen. And as much as when I was younger, I thought that was like a cool idea to like show superheroes killing corporate businessmen, because I was like in high school when The Authority came out, so that stuff was really hot back then. But it's a little condescending to have a bunch of fat guys in a room in black suits being like, you know, we've got to make sure we pump more oil from the blood of children and make sure that child who's suing for leukemia dies in a fire. Like, I mean, it's so
straight. It didn't even seem that way to me.
I mean, because in all fairness, they're all sitting around a room talking about how they're going to exploit oil, and then the next thing out of the guy's mouth is like, oh, let's make sure that child who's suing us is something something. I'm like, are you serious? Like, are you serious? You know.
Well, does that not remind you of like, thank you for not smoking?
Yeah, I mean, that's.
Yeah.
No, it's fine. It's just it's one of those things where it's like, and it's true. These corporations are like that. But I mean, come on. You know, I mean, like it's kind of it's just childish. I don't know. It's kind of condescending. I mean, not that I'm again. It's just you could have done it a smarter way. You know, and it's I don't know. It's just such a dumbing down of the character.
Okay, it's easy to say you could have done it a smarter way, yeah. But it was done in a way that was actually, you know, actually it's thrown out there. Like now people are looking at it like, yeah, this is actually what happens in business.
It's true.
You know?
Well, I think the point of it was to say that these heroes just went through such and such to get this protector of life, and look, here's what the protector of life does. He goes out and murders people. And that was the whole point of that. And then Constantine.
The protector of life murders people.
Constantine, because I just read that panel. Constantine said.
I just God, Constantine, like, asshole.
Constantine was like, I think his whole point, this whole Bullock's crap at the end is him saying, yeah, you guys effed up. And that was the whole point of the ending on Brightest Day, was that, everything you just did to save yourselves just made shit 10 times worse. And I guess that's why we go pick up Brightest Day Aftermath to find out just what he means.
Well, come on. I mean, if we can't trust the mysterious white light to protect us all, what else can we trust?
I mean, I think your first clue should have been, like, when he killed your wife, Hawkman, like when he said, I'm gonna give Hawkman his hand back, but I'm not gonna give you your wife back.
First would be that it goes, listen, Hawk, you fucked up. Dead man, you're staying dead because Hawk fucked up. I'm sorry.
Does anybody remember what Hawk's goal was?
To catch the boomerang.
Catch the boomerang.
He fucked that up. That wasn't his fault. I don't see. He stuck his hand out, right?
But he didn't catch the boomerang.
Did he fail? Did they say he failed? I told.
Yeah.
Oh, he failed. Right.
Yeah, well, I said you failed.
Nice try.
Something or other. You're not going to get your just rewards. Your mission accomplished poster. But
I have to go back to issue 7 and find out what everybody's goals is, because I think that's a little, you know. That doesn't seem a little off to you guys. He stuck his hand out to catch the fucking boomerang.
It's not his fault, yeah.
But he didn't catch the boomerang. He failed his mission.
Here's the thing about
them. Whatever. But Captain Boomerang didn't even throw the boomerang. The boomerang bombed through itself, you know, and like it the whole thing, it just kind of plays up how – and it's like he's like, just get there so I can use your hand to throw the boomerang. Why can anybody else have done that? You know, and that's ridiculous. I mean,
you need a Captain Boomerang to throw a boomerang.
So you brought Captain Boomerang back to life so you can use his hand to throw a boomerang? That's stupid. I mean, that's just stupid.
You brought Captain Boomerang back so he could go release Professor Thawne, the Reverse Flash, who
returned
whatever he had to do, and then he throws the boomerang. So it's. And just like with Jade and how whatever she did.
Bring balance to her brother.
What's his name?
Obsidian.
Obsidian. And he's still freaking evil. So he's not evil.
He's just easily
put. Sure, I just read in JSA 50 that he's doing some evil shit.
Okay.
Yeah. Welcome to Entirely Pointless.
It's just, yeah, I'm just saying this White Lantern thing, he was jerking the heroes around this entire time, and then at the very end, everybody's surprised when he fucks them over again. And
I know,
like,
I don't even understand the whole thing. I mean, it's
again, I have to say this. The entire point of their individual, like, you know, tasks is just weird, only because, again, at the end of the story, it said it needs a sacrifice to bring back Alec Holland to emerge into a Swamp Thing. Now, if Hawk actually does catch the boomerang, Dub doesn't get hit by the boomerang, and
yep.
Deadman doesn't get hit by the boomerang, then there's no sacrifice. I guess that would have been...
Oh, so he was meant to stick his chest out and not his hand.
Catch the boomerang with your chest!
But Deadman was supposed to die, so I don't understand what this is...
The entire storyline was the Deadman was supposed to die again. I mean, sure.
And no one expected him to live.
I don't even know why we're even talking about this series. It's almost like it doesn't matter. It doesn't care. Why should we even discuss it, you know?
Guys, I think I figured out the moral of Brightest Day as a story. Life is a dick. That's the only thing I can get out of the series.
I think the moral is DC can take your money whether you like it or not.
No, seriously, the life energy is a dick.
No.
Doesn't it actually say life isn't easy or some dumb shit like that? I mean, it's such a stupid, reductive argument.
All right, so we're going to pretty much move past this point because, again, Brightest Day's over now. Now we have to stay tuned for Brightest Day.
Can I ask really quick? Does anybody in the internet, anybody in the world actually care that John Constantine is now part of the DC Universe?
I care because it signaled the end of Vertigo.
They said specifically the Constantine series is still going to continue.
The
Hellblazer
would keep running.
It's going to keep running, and they said, as a matter of fact, it'll probably actually run stronger because now he's going to have more exposure and stuff. Maybe. Who knows? Like there's writers out there who are dying. Like, you know, Paul Cornell used death in Action Comics, and now writers are just beating down the door to use death, except that every writer in the world was like, that's a terrible idea. Why'd you do that? You know, I mean, like, whatever. I'm sorry. I just don't understand the logic. I like Swamp Thing. I like Swamp Thing a lot, but I don't care if John Constantine's around.
And we're going to move on. We're going to move on again. If we're actually going to pick up Brightest Day Aftermath, stay tuned. We'll probably be discussing and give you our thoughts and reviews on it. But again, it's up for debate. We don't know if we're going to actually keep it. If we have to discuss whether or not it has any pertinence to the Green Lantern.
It needs a battery in the ground somewhere, and
exactly.
We'll be there.
So now we're going to move on to actually Green Lantern-related works, and we're going to move on to part 6 of The War of the Green Lanterns. Green Lantern Emerald Warriors number 9. Well, we see more of these guys actually doing stuff with the rings, apparently, because apparently they weren't at all capable in the last issues. And we also see a new character. We see a new character that's created for the series.
Yeah, this is a new character, yeah.
I mean, this character was never mentioned before at all in the Green Lantern mythos. And I have
yet another secret guardian of the secret guardians of the secret guardians, yeah.
We see more of the works of the hidden underground of old, and apparently these Green Lanterns never seen before. You know, the factories where the Manhunters were made, newer models of the Manhunters. Green Lanterns are still being possessed, and the split vote whether or not to attack Mogo or go to the central power battery and try to fight Parallax. Not much else happens.
Well, you know, I guess not a lot happens. I was going to say, I think this is my favorite issue of this series so far, I think, because it balances a lot of the characters more than the other series issues did. And I think I kind of just gave up, you know, that the story was going to be anything more than just like this kind of, like, I made a comparison, I think, last week, like Skeletor and He-Man kind of bullshit, you know, where it's like, you know, it's just guys in colored costumes fighting legions of bad guys and stuff. And, you know, I liked it better than I liked the other issues because it just had, like I said, it had a couple of interesting points and the characters were doing different things. And I guess Frankie suggested spontaneously they knew how to use their rings all of a sudden, you know, and I mean, which is fine. I mean, it's kind of like it kind of ignores a lot of the issues before it. But what are you going to do? I don't like splitting the characters up because that just kind of gives them an excuse to not have John or Kyle get involved in the ending of the story, which is kind of annoying. But, you know, what are you going to do? And I also don't like the idea that now we're more than well past halfway through the story, and it's not featured anything that would be remotely interesting about a War of the Green Lanterns, which is Green Lanterns fighting Green Lanterns. You know what I mean? Besides the fact that we get in characters that we are Green Lanterns, that we identify with the four Earth Green Lanterns having rings that aren't Green Lantern rings, they're not actually fighting any other Green Lanterns. Like I said a million times, I want to see like Selak versus Kilowog. You know, I want to see Hal versus Kilowog. I want to see Guy go up against Selak, you know, when both of them aren't holding back and stuff. I'm not seeing that. I'm seeing the Green Lanterns use his missiles against these characters, and now you know they've already run into the Guardians, who were all possessed by the entities and stuff, and they even fought Mogo. And first off, we need to talk about this Mogo thing. Like, how close is Mogo to Oa? You know, that Oa is not, like, the whole point of Mogo is that he can't go near planets because he fucks up their orbit, you know, and they already started ignoring that by its day and in Sinestro Corps War, and I let it go. But this, it's enough is enough. He's shooting laser beams down at the planet, you know, and that's – it's absurd. I mean, you know, I mean, just go near the planet and you'll destroy it. I mean, it's ridiculous, you know. And honestly, I don't know if it's me or if it's the way the comic is told, but I didn't understand the geography at all. At one point, they're flying through the planet and they find the secret room, and I forgot they were on Oa. I thought they were in Mogo. I was like, what is that doing in the middle of Mogo? Oh, right, they're on Oa. That's fine, you know. And I don't know, it's just, again, this story's not going anywhere interesting. And then them being confronted by the Guardians possessed by the entities, I mean, that's oh, that's exciting, that's cool, but like, there's no reason they shouldn't be literally obliterated the second they enter that room. I mean, the power level on these characters that they're about to fight is astronomical, you know. So
should be staggering
now,
it
and so it's either
gonna happen, 2 versus 6.
Yeah, so what's either gonna happen is that, you know, that Krona's going to capture them and then have a whole issue where he just talks shit to them, which is probably what's going to happen because Geoff Johns writing the issue. Or what's actually more likely to happen is they'll just run away, like they've run away from every single fight that's happened so far. You know, I mean, enough is enough. At least with the John and Kyle story, we'll probably actually get to see some of that us versus them stuff I was talking about. But I don't know. Like I said, I don't like that they split them, and I don't like that the story is so simplified and it's not giving me what I want. But this was the best issue so far because at least it was balanced, and I kind of just took my hat off and just tried to enjoy it for what it was.
Well, you can't really complain about them running, can you? I mean,
no, just,
the other alternative is them fighting 1,000 Green Lanterns.
Listen, I agree that it makes sense that they run. I'm just saying, for me as a fan, I've read 4, 5, 6 issues of them just running away from fights. And
that's
not the point. I mean, it's an action movie. Like, if you see an action movie and, like, you know, if The Rock shows up and he's like, I want to fist fight you, Vin Diesel, you don't want to see them run away from each other the whole movie. You want to see them fight each other. You know, you want to see them shoot at each other. You want to see them, like, run cars into each other. I mean, what is the point of doing a movie where, like, you have Dolph Lundgren and Van Damme and they don't fight? You know, I mean, it's stupid. Nobody wants to see them just hang out. You know, you want to see Steve Austin fight Sylvester Stallone. You don't want to see them just run away from each other the whole movie. I mean, you know?
Yeah.
Anyway. Hmm.
I concur on this point. I can agree with this. I mean, anybody else want to dispute that?
Yeah, well, not dispute necessarily, but I think I enjoyed it a little more than you did. I thought this was the worst outing that Passeron had in these 9 issues. This is the worst we've seen. Well, worst I've seen them, but still pretty decent art. I enjoyed the issue for the most part. I mean, what's there not to like? We got more Kyle. We got John yelling back at Guy for getting on his case. Sure, the Guy Gardner dialogue is still pretty bad, but you know, Kyle steps up. He uses the ring better than the rest of them uses theirs. We got a tiny moment of Hal trying to instill fear in the people. I thought this was the issue where we see why they got their rings, because if Hal had picked up that Blue Lantern ring, he wouldn't have sat you down on that chair. He'd probably still be tinkering with his ring. If John had gotten the rage thing, they'd probably still be fighting John, because John's got some pent-up anger issues. And I thought this issue just confirmed that these are solid choices. You're not going to get too much characterization out of them switching colors, but this is as good as it gets. And from, like you said, now you don't want any more running. From here on now, I'd be satisfied with balls out action, preferably them going back to green and giving us all that action. But since that's probably not going to happen, you know, I'll take what I can get. And with this Guardian cliffhanger coming up, hopefully I'll be getting that. I'm sorry, real quick. The split, I don't have a problem with. I think that was obvious definitely going to happen because you got to get back to, you know, your core readers, Hal and the Green Lantern book and Kyle and the Green Lantern core book. So don't be surprised at that as they go. Go ahead.
Yeah, what I was going to go with is I'm pretty sure they are going to get back to the rings once they pull out Parallax.
Oh, yeah, that's a given. That's a...
Well, you got to get past the Guardians first and the, what is it, 7,200 Green Lanterns?
You know, I think they can honestly use the chaos of that situation to their advantage. If they have these 7,200 Lanterns charged at the same time, you know, running between them and the Guardians and, you know, hope they screw each other up. It's probably their best bet. I mean, because they're just four little targets, all things considered, out of the whole freaking army.
And there's four brightly colored targets in the sea of green.
Well, so what's the next issue in this storyline?
Green Lantern.
Oh, so we are gonna get them confronting the Guardians pretty much right away.
Right, it'll be part 7, Green Lantern, Rainbow Jet John.
I mean, I don't know. Like, it's one of those things where it's like, yeah, it's just, I don't know. It's kind of like, think of it like as boss fights. You know, I mean. You know, this is probably going to be the first real fight they get into, and, you know, and it's going to be either 3 seconds long or it's going to be 3 seconds long, you know what I mean? And it's already like, this is the end game. I mean, how much bigger could it get, you know? So I don't know. It's just, it's kind of like.
Well, again, it's, I mean, to say, we still have Kyle and John having to go to Mogo, so there's going to have to be some sort of fight scene. I mean, he's more not going to be defended on that planet. FIL, I have no idea how they're going to try to do the Green Lantern Corps, or, you know, JT, for example. And then in Jeff Johns' book, we're more likely to see some degree of, you know, of a fight scene. You know, a lot more dialogue. I'm betting a lot more dialogue, but there has to be at least a fight scene. I mean, come on, we have what, four more issues?
Well, I mean, it's not going to be a back and forth. I mean, I don't know. Like I said, Jeff Johns is not wonderful at writing fight scenes and stuff. And I mean, you know what? Okay, here's the deal. I think it's this issue is like, I mean, at least the storyline is kind of like a little microcosm of the problem with the Green Lantern, you know, comics so far. Like, it's just event after event after event, and it's just confrontation after confrontation after confrontation. You know, like, as soon as the storyline starts, it's John versus Kyle, and it's Guy versus Hal, and those events happen with no consequences of any sort, you know, and no real demerit or back and forth, you know. And then, you know, it's like, it's going to be Green Lantern versus Green Lantern, and then immediately thereafter, you know, it's most, like I said, basically just every Green Lantern is just coming after them like a missile and they're running, so we don't get that. And it's like, now it's Mogo! It's like, yeah, and then Mogo, you know, they immediately escape Mogo, and it's like, but now they have different colored rings again, which, you know, which has been the most in-depth part of the story so far. But, you know, like as Wes said, they're pretty much past that now. Until Kyle does his big move, they're pretty much past that whole point of the storyline, you know, and now it's like, and now there's the Guardians, like, I don't know. It's almost like they're ramping up to the point where it's kind of like, you should be so excited, but I don't care. You know, I don't care. You know, it's like, how many planes are they going to parachute out of? You know, eventually you get tired of it, you know?
Yeah, of all the different pairings, Hal and Guy have pretty much done all they're going to do with their ring of interest. It's really down to Kyle and John to see what they can do, which would probably be Green Lantern Corps, you think?
I mean, you'll probably end up seeing – once Green Lantern Corps rolls around, that's when you're going to start seeing
– I mean, the only other thing we have left for Hal and Guy is that Guy is now in possession of Krona's gauntlet. So we're going to see something happen with that.
Yeah, that's kind of random too that he gets possession. It's like, do we really need – he barely using the ring. Do we really need that?
This pretty much was trying to reflect Guy being able to control both the green ring and the red ring during Black's Night.
You know what's funny though, because logically they should have given it to Kyle, because Kyle and John on their mission, they're both their rings kind of not rely on other rings, but they've shown that the indigo ring heightens all the energy of the other rings, and blue rings kind of rely on the green rings.
Great.
So you think they would have given the gauntlet to Kyle or to John. That way it would have been like, well, you guys are obviously in more trouble than we are. You guys obviously need these.
So, I mean, just imagine what Kyle could do with both the blue and green energy at the same time. He could probably do something godly with it.
Well, not even that. I think he was saying that you're already at a disadvantage. We're going to take this weapon that could help you. Like,
yeah.
It's kind of a good move. We got this question from a reader, listener, rather, on Twitter.
We got a question?
Yes, we did.
Lay it on us.
Not sure if I missed it or not. The blue rings have a certain effect on others. They charge the green. They calm the red, prevent absorption of orange, drain the yellow. So how come as far back as Blackest Night, this hasn't happened? No Sinestro Corps members suffered drainage in Blackest Night. Sinestros didn't drain in New Guardians. Hal's doesn't drain near Kyle. Did it lose that ability, or did I just miss something?
Let's say strategic retconning.
It's just strategic. Yeah, strategic, I guess. That's probably the way to put it. You know, I've asked since I joined this cast maybe, I guess, more than a year ago, just about every other show, what do these rings do? You know, like, it's never been made clear, and I've read hundreds of Green Lantern comics since then. I've reread all these issues a million times, and I can't tell you what the red rings do. I can't tell you what the purple rings do. And I was kind of hoping this storyline would really illuminate what the blue rings do, because when they said, you know, St. Walker was going to join the Justice League, I was like, but how? His ring functions only as a cipher for other rings, or, you know, and of course, it's like, well, no, it's just not the way it is anymore, you know. And I mean, you had Larfleeze, who had the power of an entire power core, like an entire central battery, as one guy, and Hal with one blue ring and one green ring was able to hold him off and defeat him. I mean, you know, which means a blue and a green ring together are more powerful than the Guardians of the Universe, you know. I mean, so, and yet, you know, when anybody else has them in their hand, they don't know what the fuck they're doing, you know. And yet, you know, thousands and thousands of Black Lanterns can descend upon every core combined, and they can't defeat them, even though, of course, again, you know, with the combined power of one blue ring and one green ring, you can obliterate a force that it can defeat all the Guardians. And yet you had a Legion of Blue, Legion of Green working together, can't defeat, you know, thousands of zombies. I mean, it's just stupid. I mean, this guy's absolutely right. I don't know, dude. I don't know what to tell you.
let's go back and look at this. The original concept of these rings were supposed to be like to play out the fact that the green ring and the yellow ring were opposites of one another. One, a yellow ring was in the immediate vicinity of a green ring, it depowered it. It couldn't affect it because back when, that was a story. A green ring could not affect the color yellow. Now, the newer rings came about, again, through this concept. Red had an effect on what, blue? No.
Red burned through most of them, but blue was able to purge the fire.
Yeah. Blue was able to purge red. So blue had an effect on red. Blue had an effect on yellow by siphoning its power. Yellow still had an effect on green if you weren't able to control your fear. Orange had an effect on everything because it was just overly powered. I mean, it held off the entire blue lantern core. It held off the entire blue lantern core until green showed up. And compassion had the power of all, but apparently you need to be an asshole or need to have compassion, be able to walk in a mile in somebody else's shoes or something or another. Again, these things weren't specifically classified. They were brought out saying, like, you know, they have an effect on each other. But when the story actually came out, no one bothered to actually figure out what the hell kind of effect they had on one another until someone decided, oh, you know, it'll be fun if blue had a calming effect on red. I'd be like, okay, that's great. That's great. So what else does it do? Apparently it has an effect on yellow. That's great, but I thought it already had an effect on red. Why does it need to affect yellow too?
Yeah. Well, maybe it's just a matter of willpower. Maybe we can just assume that Kyle had enough willpower to contain the ring from draining Hal's yellow ring, but just not quite enough to get, you know, to stop the green rings, because at the end of the day, he's still a Green Lantern, so he's going to want Green Lantern's ring charge,
the
right?
The thing is,
he's going to hope for his friends, but he's not going to hope that Hal gets weaker.
Okay, that's something to say, because again, these things aren't based on willpower alone. Green is based on willpower alone. The rest of these are
well,
based
the concept,
on the
not
rest,
necessarily.
The rest of them are based off of superficial emotions that don't really make any sense. You know, hope will get us through this? No, I understand this. Hope will get us through this. So I'm going to lie here and hope that my ring doesn't defeat your ring at this crucial point in time. Okay? That makes as much sense as greed being able to defeat an entire core.
Well, it's not necessary. I don't think with the blue rings. I think, you know, it's supposed to be spiritual. It's not necessarily, I hope you'll stop shooting at me.
Of course not.
It's more of, I hope I'll be all right at the end of this.
Yes, of course, because apparently that's what we learned. Even though if you're hopeful, the ring won't exactly do what you want it to do.
Well, then again, Kyle doesn't have a lot of experience with the ring, so he doesn't know what to hope for.
And that takes us back to
the fact that
last Green Lantern Corps issue where Gantha says you weren't ready yet.
Because
you're not prepared, rather.
It takes months and months and months to train a Blue Lantern to actually do anything.
Right.
Again, these concepts were thrown out during the wake of event stories. Again, they weren't fleshed out well enough because between these stories, we didn't really get that much leeway. There wasn't enough time for someone to actually write stories just to, just about the characters themselves to dealing with what they had to go through. For example, like right after Blackest Night, we didn't get enough time for Kyle to go like, you know what, maybe I should learn more about the other characters, figure out what's going on. Someone should have went to the Blue Lantern Corps to go like, what's going on, guys? You're apparently the enemies of the Green Lantern Corps, but you're not really our enemies. We should figure out what's going on with one another. But no, we get jumped into the War of the Green Lanterns. So, I don't know. I believe there's just not enough planning. There's just not enough planning going on.
Yeah. Like, there was an interview with Geoff Johns IGN, and they asked him, is there going to be any downtime for Green Lantern? Yeah. And he pretty much just said, no, I don't think that's a good idea. They're cops. They need to be out in action and blah, blah, blah. You can find that on the greenlantern.com. But, we're not going to slow down.
I don't feel they've been cops in a long time.
Well, they don't fight a lot of crime.
To be fair, all the cops may have your occasional, like, SWAT drug raid or something. Normally, they will just have regular, small, little things they do. They won't, every single day, they won't go into a freaking riot, a freaking war between half the city.
I haven't seen them actually be cops since, what was it? I can't even say there were cops during that.
It's supposed to be the internal affairs of the Corps. So
have they done
internal affairs is a big deal.
They haven't been internal affairs since the concept was said that they were internal affairs.
Well, Final Crisis was an internal affairs matter.
Well, how long ago was that?
Oh, wait. No, I said it's 08. 2008 was Final Crisis.
That was quite a while ago, since these characters were introduced. Well, before that they were introduced, but, since they've done anything remotely internal affairs. Remotely internal affairs. What was Boudica doing in the Justice League?
Dying.
What was that at all? Eternal Affairs to the Green Lantern.
It reminds me of like that show. Not to be like whatever on that show, but that show Smallville, where it's like it's been 10 seasons, and every other episode, it's literally like he's like he doesn't fight crime. It's like his friend gets stuck in a well, and he spends like an entire episode trying to get them out of a well. And it's like he should be doing something besides saving like the same three people over and over and over. And that's really what it feels like. I mean, I get the idea that it's supposed to be like, well, the audience isn't going to care if he just saves person A from a bus crash. And it's like, yeah, because then when they have the episodes or the storylines where, they just save person A from a bus crash, nobody cares. But I don't think that's necessarily true. I mean, I just think they need to like justify their stories. I mean, if they came up with a real legitimate threat, that was worth telling a story over, or a clever story idea, I don't think anybody would really care that it didn't have to do with Green Lantern history or Krona or all that dumb shit that's forcing
well,
people to leave.
Well, let's say it again. We can literally say this is a real legitimate threat to the Green Lanterns. I mean, Guardians are being
Green
possessed.
Yeah.
Guardians are being possessed by entities of emotional power, freakish amount of power here. Their entire command structure has been taken over. They're without their normal means of defense. They're up a creek without a paddle.
Yeah.
They're technically having a moment of, this is one of our greatest challenges of all time. What can we do here? So again, this is one of those stories. This is a story that you yourself would just ask to happen. But is it happening well enough that we are content with? It's one of those things that we ask for these stories, but then when we get these stories, we aren't exactly content with them.
All right, well, to switch gears a little bit, I don't want to drag this on any further, but we're on part 6 now.
Mm-hmm.
That's more than halfway over. What are our expectations? What do we want out of the ending of this? Knowing that we haven't gotten what we thought we were going to get, what do you want out of this? What can it do? Can it still get to where you wanted it? What can it do? What do you expect? What do you want out of the last 4 issues?
All right. Well,
something to happen.
No, call them. Be more specific. What exactly do you actually want?
Oh, I got a lot of happen.
Well, what I specifically want to happen is I really want to see, specifically with Kyle and John, I want to see them finally put those rings to good use. You know, mm-hmm. See some of that Kyle, stuff where we know he has the potential, and maybe see a little bit of smidge of John tap that compassion. I want to see what they can do with that kind of stuff. While at the same time, I'd like to see these fights get a little bit more meaningful, rather than, like it was mentioned before, just flee. Oh God, we can't win. Flee. Mm. I mean, if you're going to set them against such impossible odds, either give them a way out or don't do it, because not fun just to watch 12 issues of someone running.
I understand. You know what? I would actually want a lasting ramification in this story, like something to actually happen here that will actually be meaningful. I mean, I would actually want it to be that in the part of the story, Kyle, John, Hal, Guy, whoever actually goes up against one of their brethren, one of their corpsmen, and they have to put him down. That's the only way they can do. You know, they have to put them down. That would be a lasting ramification of the story if it happens. Because they're against their fellow corpsmen. None of them are able to, you know, break free from Parallax's hold. And if they're, you know, if they're as good as if they just no longer are just missiles that are being pointed in the direction of to have them go from point A to point B without having to actually confront these characters, then that's what I want. I want to see, you know, one of these characters go up against another character. Have it be that the only way to get past them is to put these guys down. Because if they don't, there's no way they'll win the fight.
Then they have to kill a friend or two in order to save the universe.
If it happens, it happens. I mean, that's where the story is supposed to go. You're supposed to get to the point where, you know, what can they do to overcome this adversity?
I thought we were close to that in this issue when a guy just spits all over everybody and you see people, like, screaming and throbbing and pain and stuff, and you would assume that, okay, if this was enough to destroy all this shit on Rhea or whatever that
riot
was, right? Yeah, if it was enough to do all that damage there, and Hal was screaming for his life, then you would think that guy just murdered like a couple sectors worth of people.
You know what I don't see enough of in these issues? Actual meaningful exchange between them and their Green Lantern counterparts, because, you know, this reminds me too much of Blackest Night, when the characters came being revived from the dead, they're all like, oh yeah, they're not them, they're just, you know, revived from the dead zombies, animated to believe that they're them, and, you know, to throw us off our game, and everybody's like, all right, that's cool, no need to talk to them, no need to be like, you're my father, stop fighting me, I'm supposed to, you know, protect you. It's like, no, none of that, you're just an animated corpse that I don't need to give a damn about. In this story, I don't see enough of the guys going like, yo, pull out of this. You're a Green Lantern. You're supposed to overcome fear. I don't see enough of Hal running up to Kilowog and be like, break free of this hold, man. You can do it. I don't see enough of Sally going like, these guys coming up to meaningful characters that they've already had exchange with to go like, I know you're better than this, Sally. You can break free. Do it, man. And the guy goes like, no, he can't. He can't break free. I gotta take him down. I gotta put him down now, because he should have overcome this fear, but he can't. So I don't see enough of these exchanges happening. I see enough of these exchanges between the Earthlanders, yeah, because, you know, we have to pay attention to the core Earth characters, because DC believes that we only pay attention to these characters alone. That's the only reason why we're picking up the books, and that's why we have an entire series dedicated just to these guys.
They clearly don't believe that, because we've got Red Lanterns coming out soon.
Yeah, but will it be headlined by a human character?
I guess.
I think it's going to be atrocious for the main guy, but sticking with the issue at hand, the main problem with this whole series, and even to an extent Blackest Night, was that it would have been so much better if it actually was these characters, if there were tough choices to make, if it was an ideological battle, not just that we're in a monumental battle.
We've said this a lot of times. We've actually mentioned this a lot of times in previous casts. But of course, we don't technically get these things. We get a story where we're led to believe there's supposed to be a giant battle between Green Lanterns, but it's a little more than a brainwashing fight that we've seen before.
That's so easy a way to take out this issue when it's so much more complicated yet meaningful to go for the ideological, well, we're on this side, we have to fight even though we're friends. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I want to see, I don't know. I mean, at this point, like I said, I've given up any kind of ideological or meaningful or character-driven storyline. I mean, like, I think Brandon said that. I don't know if we specifically said it, but he said how they'd asked him, when are you going to do smaller stories? And he said, never. And then he said, I feel like – and he started giving an answer, and then kind of in the middle of it was like, oh, you know. And I mean, all these events are character-driven and stuff. I'm like, no, I don't think you know what character-driven means. I mean, character-driven means the characters have a feeling or an emotion to interact with each other that leads to something. It doesn't mean like – A Green Lantern villain that no one's touched in 30 years shows up and everyone wears different color rings to fight him. That's not what character motivation is, or characters. It's not character driven. I mean, I like to see some more stuff that's character driven. I mean, I think I made a big point when there was that issue where just Hal and Carol were flying around in jets for a whole issue. And I was like, oh, this is the best issue of Green Lantern in like 6 years, you know? And it really was. And, you know, as much as I don't think Geoff Johns is a wonderful writer, he's definitely best when he's just a couple people sitting in a room not giving exposition or retconning themselves, you know? So I really would like an issue that was just kind of about them hanging out. And, you know, I really would like an issue that was a series that was a little bit more balanced, like the Green Lantern core storylines, you know? So, again, having said that, I'm giving up on all that completely. So at this point, I'm just kind of hoping for a couple of cool fights and something really that I didn't expect to happen at the end of the story.
Hmm. Well, I think
lowered expectations.
We're getting a aftermath issue out of this aftermath series, a mini series, 3 issues worth out of this part story is going to say we're going to get something deep out of this, because Blackest Night. Well, you can argue that Brightest Day was its aftermath, but Blackest Night didn't get, you know, this thing, this big aftermath series that launched out of it. There was no Sinestro Corps aftermath, you know. So I'm hoping that at the end of this, or somewhere in this next 4 parts, that we get some major detail that justifies a 3-issue miniseries. Mm-hmm. And it's not just, oh, we're going to fill in the blanks that, you know, that the cliffhanger left, you know?
Yeah, that'd be nice, but you know, actually, I hope so. Why not? I mean, they're teasing that something major is going to happen, and I think everybody's just kind of assuming that, you know, the old standby that somebody's going to die, or that, you know, someone's just not going to be a Green Lantern anymore, because that's what the storyline is promoting.
Well, I'm still of the opinion that it's got to be Natsu, and that sends Kyle away from the core. So I'm guessing that's what it is, that Natsu's taking the deal, because it is Tony Bedard writing this aftermath series, and I want to get into that, because that's months away.
Yeah.
Off.
Yeah.
Damn near August.
Well, it's funny because we it's almost like, and it's, I kind of feel like we skip over so many essential parts of the comics as we're doing this cast, because, and it's, I mean, it's almost like it's sort of our fault, but it really isn't our fault, and we're not really appreciating each comic book as its own individual work of art. I mean, it's 30
Probably
pages
not.
Of drawing and writing, and it's balanced in a certain way. And it's almost like we should respect that, but they're not written that way. You know, they're not really written as these issues. You know, I mean, as much work as Doug Mankey puts into this 1-2-page spread, it seems awesome, and it's almost like it confuses you, because you see this really awesome picture of Krona and Hal fighting, and you're like, that's a cool picture. Why am I not turning the page quicker? You know, like, what's wrong with me that I'm not reading the next 6 issues and talking about what's going to happen in August? So, I mean, that's you know, I know it's very sales motivated, but I wish it wasn't so transparent. You know, I mean, yes, if you're all about making money, you're going to make money, you know, but I mean, are these stories really going to stand the test of time? You know, I mean, you know, we talk about Denny O'Neill and Neil Adams on Green Lantern, and we talk about, you know, a John Byrne on Superman, you know, and we talk about Frank Miller on Batman. I mean, are we really going to talk about Geoff Johns on Green Lantern in 20 years? You know, I mean, if he's not still around, that is, you know, so.
Who knows? Who can say?
Who can say?
Who can say? We can't. I mean, we can't predict. All right. Yeah. So we've given our 2 cents. We've given our thoughts and our predictions and our dislikes and our likes about the Island Wars Part 6. You know, War of the Green Lions Part 6. We're all anticipating what's going to go down in issue Part 7. Because I mean, come on, we're sort of invested into seeing how this is going to turn out. We are invested in seeing how this is going to end. I mean, we want to see how this story is going to end. Just because we have no idea what they're going to do.
Yeah, I mean, I guess it's good that we don't have any fucking clue what's going on. But it's also kind of like – it's not like anything they do is going to really – not to be shitty, but matter in the long run, you know?
No, come on. We cannot say that again. We can't say that again. I mean, we're in the long run, 20 years down the line, of course, you can't say that this is going to actually matter. But for the next year – of our lives is probably going to matter in some way to the Green Lantern story. After Aftermath, we're going to see what's going to go down for Green Lantern Corps, Green Lantern, Emerald Wars, if that's still going to be going on. And you know, the anticipated Red Lantern book. You know, we're gonna see some things that come out of this storyline that's gonna matter for the future prospects.
Do you swear? Because I don't know. No.
I'm glad you tuned in for this episode, and hopefully you're gonna tune in for the next one. We're gonna review the Green Lantern Corps. So till next time, I'm Frank Mateo. May the light shine on.
Be sure to check us out at www.thegreenlanterncorps.com.
You can also email us at contact@thegreenlanterncorps.com.
You can follow us on Twitter at @theGLCorps.
And be sure to check out our YouTube channel at youtube.com/GLSpotlight.
You can reach our voicemail line at 313-GL1-2814. That's 313-451-2814.
Thanks for listening, and check us out next time, and please stop masturbating when I'm talking to you.
Don't forget to check out Kirby Crackle, the performance of our opening theme, Ring Capacity, at kirbycracklemusic.com. Also check out the Roy Clark Method, the performance of our ending theme, Sector 2814, at freewebs.com/Roy Clark Method.
I have this magic ring. It is the color green. It can do anything. Sometimes it speaks to me. It says, how?